speaker for today, Catherine.
I've known Catherine for almost since I've been here, and it's been my privilege to hear her speak, and I'm really looking forward to this morning.
So thank you, Catherine.
Good morning, everyone. I am a very grateful member of Al-Anon. Thank you for being here and supporting Family Recovery this morning. And did I say I'm Catherine? I'm Catherine! Today I'm Catherine. When I first came in, I think I might have used a fictitious name. Because I sure didn't want anybody to know what was going on in my house. And if I was in this meeting, you were going to know what was going on. There was a lady I went to meetings with for years out in the Stone Mountain area, and she did for about 5 years, used a fictitious name, and then she just came in one day and introduced herself by her real name, and none of us could ever call her by that after that, so we still called her by the other name. So whenever I come to these roundups, I'm so moved because celebrate the miracle. Everybody sitting in this room today is a miracle, and I don't take that for granted today. I don't take it for granted 1 minute, because from where we came from to where we are today, and I get to get up today and I get to be here. I don't have to be here. I get to. It's people like you that came to these meetings even when you didn't want to, and I came to these meetings even when I didn't want to, and I came when I was very angry at the person who got me here, and then lo and behold, I realized I grew up in this thing. My whole family was from here. But there was a man named George M. who would, when he spoke or when he would greet you at the door of a meeting, he would look at you and you'd know he was looking at you. And he would say, "May I hug you?" And he'd say, "If nobody's told you today they love you, let me be the first." So if nobody's told you today they love you, let me be the first. Because in this disease, there's not a lot of love going around. We think it's love. It's control is what it is. But I want to thank the committee for inviting me. I haven't been to the Marietta Roundup in a long time, and I heard that you haven't been here for a year or 2 years. And so this is the first one again, and I'm quite honored to be here. But a lot of people don't know what Al-Anon is. I didn't know what it was. I knew that when my husband went into treatment, they told me that if I wanted to see him, I had to go to this thing for the families, and I sure didn't want to do that. So I'll get to that in a minute, but I just want to talk about what we are. We're people who are affected by the disease of alcoholism. It can be a parent, it can be a spouse, it can be a child, it can be somebody at work, it can be a nephew. And we're affected by whatever goes on in the chaos of alcoholism. And it's chaos. And I'm trying to control the uncontrollable every day with no tools, trying to figure out what to do in this disease. Didn't even know it was a disease. I knew he got drunk, he got mean, and things got broken. And I'm trying to control all that, and I didn't get it. And I started coming to these meetings, and people started sharing some stuff. And that's when I first started realizing that this is a safe place. And I truly believe in the anonymity. What you say here stays here. Unless, of course, you're being taped, and then it goes worldwide. And at this point, I want to thank the people that do show up and tape these, because they're not making a whole lot of money on this. But I had an opportunity. Bob and I are people that like to move, and we had decided we wanted to go overseas one time, so we got our sponsors to co-sign that move, and we moved. But there were some people there that were surviving in Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon on speaker tapes because they were living in a foreign country and they didn't have the language, and all they had were the speaker tapes. And I didn't understand when people would stand up here and do this. I thought it was an ego thing. It's not at all. I think the whole program, I know it started with the Big Book. It was a 12-step process. Al-Anon's literature, it's about the 12-step process. It's about sharing how you have recovered from this disease. And that's what my literature does, and I've lived overseas twice now. And in one place, I was there right after the wall came down, and I was in East Germany where it was communist run, and so there was no infrastructure, so I couldn't make phone calls. I was used to making phone calls every day. They spoke Russian, not English. you know, Russian and German, not English. And so what I would do is I had my little speaker tapes, I had my literature, and I would continue to do what I learned how to do here in Atlanta. And then when I needed to have that personal contact, I get on a train and I go where I knew people. And this program is worldwide. We've got a lady in one of my groups that she every now and then she'll either go to India to work or she'll go to Africa to work, take the literature. The speaker last night was talking about shipping literature to people that needed it. We would ship our literature to these places so that people could hear the message of hope and love. That's all we are. We're not here to make your life miserable. We're affected by this disease. I was talking to somebody out in the hallway, and he says, oh, my God, there's all these Al-Anon standing over there. Let me stick close to the wall because there's probably a gun and a knife somewhere. And I said, luckily, you know, the gun was mine. The knife was my sponsor's. I said, luckily, we're in recovery, and we don't have to do that anymore. But it does happen. And May is a very eventful month in my life. Bob and I met in May, and when we got together, in our literature, it talks about the alcoholic is like a tornado roaring through the lives of others. When we got together, we were absolutely a tornado roaring through the lives of others, both of us. I reacted, he acted, I reacted, and we affected so many people around us, and they're still suffering. You know, our children were definitely affected by what we did and didn't do. And we still see the suffering that's going on. But we absolutely were brought together. I didn't know why I stayed with him. I didn't know why I went with him. I saw what alcohol did to him the first 2 days that we were together. And so in my mind, it's like, oh, if I could just get away from this, then I will, and I'm talking to God at this time, right? If you can just get me out of this, I will never do this again. And so the next thing you know, we're married. We met in May and we're married in July. And there was a prior marriage that had to dissolve during that time. And so that was some of the shame that I carried with me for a long time. And what I know is that I didn't know how to say no. I would get myself into situations because I couldn't say no. And this year, in our literature, there's a piece of literature that we have. It's called Reaching for Personal Freedom. And it talks about choices. I didn't think I had choices. I thought that I was just wrapped up in this chaos called alcoholism, and I was going along for the ride. I wanted to get off, and I couldn't get off. I didn't know how to get off. I wanted him dead, and I wanted me to retire with the insurance money in Palm Beach. Made sense to me. But mind you, by the time we got here, he was unemployed. I was working. I didn't have that much insurance money. I probably would have lasted a weekend in Palm Beach. But that's where we were. And I didn't think I had a choice. And so the longer I'm in recovery, the more I know I have a choice. And there's a reading on the seventh step in that book. It talks about, and I'm really focused on this year, that there is a moment right before I act that I make that choice. I choose recovery or I choose the disease. And in that moment, I have a God today that I can bring in and ask for guidance. And it can be 30 seconds, but it's stopping the insanity of what alcoholism is all about. And that has meant so much to me this year because I had a choice in all of this, and I didn't know I did. And I participated in this, and I didn't know I did. When I first got here, it was all his fault. All I wanted was out. And, we met in May. The last drunk was Memorial Day weekend. And I'll start there because that was the pivotal moment for me that I can look back on. And the family's affected. What are the effects? The effects are financial insecurity. For me, I thought if we just moved every 6 months, it would be better, it would be different. So we were always in chaos. We lived in boxes. We still have boxes in the house, but it's not because we're moving. It's because we're constantly cleaning. The infidelity is there, not only on his part, but it had been in a previous marriage on my part. That was part of the shame that I brought in here. And it was that whole thing of, I'm going to pay you back. I'm going to get you back for what you've done or not done. There's violence. I lived in the violence. There's incest. That's all part of what this disease is. And it's not because someone's bad. You know, thank God I was able to start coming to some AA meetings and listening to the speakers and to see very clearly about the disease of alcoholism. And someone, and I can't even remember who it was, but they talked about, if you can see that the man takes a drink, the drink takes a drink, and then the drink takes the man, then in Al-Anon I learned how to start separating the man from the disease. How can I love this person and still protect me within that love? Not easy. Took a long time to get there. Took a long time to learn how to start saying no, meaning no and not explaining no. So that Memorial Day weekend, we were moving because I thought it would be a good idea to move one more time. As I was at the new house, he was at the old house, and I'm on the phone doing what we do. We call to see how many drinks you've had. Starting at like 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm checking up. All right. Have you had anything to drink? Haven't had anything to drink. Have you had anything to drink at 12 o'clock? Haven't had anything to drink. By 3 o'clock, he's in a blackout. Oh, I only had two. So by the time that night he gets over to the place that we're moving into, he is in the full rage, the full blackout rage, and I'm in there trying to control the uncontrollable. I don't want the neighbors to know that this man might be out of control. I didn't know that I could leave. That's one of the things that I learned. Alcoholism is a disease of isolation. And by the time we got to this point, we had been married 6 years at this point, living in this on a daily basis. On a daily basis. And you adjust, readjust, and maladjust. And for me, the first time, it was like, how dare you do this to me? And by the last time, I thought, I deserve this. Somehow I deserve this violence. He is my punishment. And that night, that last night, because I had no help, I had no help. And that's what Al-Anon has given me. It has given me a choice. It has given me an option. By that night, he's full in that blackout. And Bob used to, we had weapons in the house, and he liked to bring the guns out. And so we'd do the Russian roulette. And I would sit there, and I learned how to use my silence as a weapon. And I would sit there, and I'd say, okay, if we get through this, tomorrow it will be different. And then if we move, then the new place will have new feelings and it will be different. And so that was the pattern we had gotten into. This night, though, what happens to the family members is something snapped. Something snapped in me, and I went for the gun. And I tried to kill my husband that night because that was better than having to do this one more day. And for us, it was the first time I left. I got in this car and I drove all around Atlanta. If anybody's familiar with Atlanta, we've got 285 and it just goes around and around and around. And I didn't know where else to go. And so I came back home. I came back home. And when I got there, the fire truck is there. The helicopter's there. The whole neighborhood's in the front yard. And I'm thinking, oh my God. And so I come up and the cops are pulling, you know, they got him handcuffed behind his back and taking him to the car. And so this lady puts her arm around me and she says, honey, welcome to the neighborhood. That's where it takes us. And what's significant for the family members, if you have been in that car driving around and around and around, I went back to what I knew. I went back to what I knew because what I didn't know was more fearful than what I knew. And somehow I would be able to control that. And somehow I would be able to manage it. And then the next day he would pay. And then we'd start that whole process again. But this night, somebody called, he tried to set the house on fire that we were moving into, and somebody called the fire department, and of course everybody comes out. And so that's where we started. They take him to jail, and I watch movies. You know, they've got one phone call, right? Well, no. They can call all night and call collect. And so he was calling all night collect, and I was accepting the collect charges. Al-Anon taught me that I don't have to collect the to accept the collect charges. But that's where we started. That's where this disease took us. You know, for me in that marriage, 6 years. It doesn't seem a long time. I guess it was an intervention. I don't know what it was. I just know that his mother didn't want him back because she had her own. That's what she told me. And so we told him, if you're going to come, and he wanted to help finish the move. That was his motivation for getting out of jail. He wanted to come help with the move. So I said, okay, you can come home under the condition that when we're done with the move, you go get help. And so it was manipulation. I don't know what it was, but he went to treatment. And when he got in there, and they don't have that treatment center anymore. Anybody that's familiar with Atlanta and the Nava area, there was a place called Peachtree Parkwood. And I think it's condominiums now. But he went to that treatment, and then I'm getting that phone call. Get me out of here. And I had enough to know, no, you're staying. Because I thought at that point that if he was locked up, I could leave. So I go home and I start packing and the mind starts because my mind is just as crazy as anybody else's mind. When I'm in my disease, that mind doesn't stop. And I'm going on and on and on and on and on. And I'm thinking I have no choice. I can't get out because he's going to find me. No matter what I do, he's going to find me. And so that night was the night that I tried to kill myself because that was the only way I knew to get out. And so that's where this disease will take the family members. We're either going to kill you or we're going to kill ourselves. And then we're going to blame you for whatever. For killing you, we're going to blame you. But we see that in our meetings a lot. It's fun. I've been in meetings. We can laugh. We can learn to laugh at this stuff. But the reality is people die from this disease. I had a nephew last year. He was 35. He grew up around this. He knew about AA. I heard some people talking last night about where they have their meetings in this church in Roswell. He was a member of that church. He died from this disease last year. Could I control that? I couldn't control that. Does it hurt? It hurts. It hurts because it is a disease that will kill. And everybody that gets back, I am so grateful that you're here. I am so grateful that you found your way back and you didn't die out there. Because it's a reality. And that the family member didn't die. So that's enough of that. So we're here. He's in treatment. I'm going like the dutiful wife to treatment to take him his pajamas, to take him his cigarettes. Because they let him smoke at that time. They didn't want him to have any chocolate nor coffee, but they let him smoke. So I don't know that. But I was... And that was something else his mother taught me really well, that if you give an alcoholic a lot of chocolate, they're not going to drink so much. And if you coat their stomach with milkshakes before they start drinking, then they're not going to drink so much. And so I was really getting into that. Have more chocolate. So that's where we were. And the treatment center told me, if you want to see him, you have to go to this thing for families on Wednesdays. And so I went and I was angry because I was doing one more thing for this man that I hated, that I didn't even want to be with. And I go into this room with 30 people just like me, one-upping each other on how horrible it was in our house. But you don't understand, this is what's going on in my house. And so we were doing that, and there were two voices of Al-Anon in that meeting. And this one lady, and I see her at meetings still today, this one lady, as we went around and talked about that, she said, it does not have to be that way anymore. I heard it. I didn't know what it meant. I had no idea what it meant, but I heard that there might be a solution, that there might be a way out of this. So I kept going to that treatment center, and then she told me something else that was probably the most valuable thing that she could tell me, is go out to the community and go to meetings in the community, because that's where the recovery is. That's where people are healing from this disease. Everybody in this treatment center is just like you. They're angry, and you're just going to feed off of each other's anger. And you're going to share the mess. My sponsor told me years ago when I first started doing this, she says, let's get up there and share the, what is it? Share the message, don't share the mess. So, because we like to share the mess. So I started going to those meetings, and it was over at the NAVA Club. And again, the AA program, one more time, provided a place for the families to begin recovery. AA gave us these steps because there was a knowledge way back then that the family needed help too. And so these steps, we got these steps and we started working these steps. And then we started writing our own literature. So I started going to those meetings. And if you've ever been there, the AAs are on one side of the wall. We're on the other side. I'm sitting in my meeting listening to see if I could hear him. And anybody that knows my husband, he has a very loud voice. You could definitely hear him then because he has a very angry, loud voice. And I think, oh. And so some lady was sitting next to me. I don't even remember who it was. And she just pat me and she'd say, honey, your meeting's in here. Get your mind with your body. Silly little sayings like that have stayed with me through my entire recovery. Keep your mind with your body. When I'm there worried about, are we going to be able to pay the phone bill? When I'm there worried about, do I have enough gas in the car to go to work? When I'm there worried about, is my daughter dying on the street out there by herself? Get your mind with your body and stay right here in this moment. And that's when I can start beginning to heal and feel the miracles of this program. So I started doing that, and I started listening, and I started watching everybody laugh. It was the first place that was ever safe for me, because when you share what you're living in with your family, at least in my home, when I shared it with my family, the pat answer is, well, leave him. Leave him. And so every time I call and share, well, why are you still there? Leave him. Why are you still there? Leave him. And I think the very first Al-Anon speaker I heard, there were two speakers. The very first one told me that because of this program, I don't have to plot murder, suicide, or revenge anymore, one day at a time. And then the other speaker, it just hit me in the chest. She said, it's okay to love an alcoholic. Because I thought there was something wrong with me. I didn't know how to love. I just knew I couldn't leave. But when I heard that, it was like, maybe I do know how to love. And so Al-Anon has taught me through these years how to love healthy and how to love myself within that love of the alcoholic. Because sometimes it's hard stuff, and I'll share that with my daughter later on. But I started to heal. He started to heal. We're both going to celebrate 34 years. He's the end of this month and I'm in June. We're going to celebrate 34 years in this program. Am I the same person that I was when I came in? No. Why am I not the same person? Because I started working the steps. I found a sponsor. She was a transplant from California. She was angry. She didn't like the way we did it. She did not like the way we did it because we were doing it wrong. But I was attracted to that because she could say what she needed to say, and I had stopped talking a long time ago. And so I asked her to sponsor me, and we got started on this wonderful program. And she got me into those steps. And I started seeing and hearing in the meetings that first step, I didn't get it. There's in our literature, there's a saying, contempt prior to investigation. The family members, it's not my problem, it's his. Why do I have to go to these meetings? He's the one that has the problem drinking, not me. That contempt prior to investigation will kill families. If it doesn't do it physically, it does it emotionally and spiritually. And so I was very, very fortunate that when I started going, I got connected with people that were right in the middle of this program, and they loved it, and they believed in the steps. And I started working those steps, and that first step, I didn't get it. I don't have a problem with alcoholism. Oh, yes, I do. I have a personality change when I watch someone else pick up a drink. I can be that person in the restaurant when someone I've never met before, I probably will never see again, I'm counting their drinks. Because my mind was not with my body. My mind was over there paying attention to you. So we started walking through these steps. I had no problem with the insanity step. I knew he was insane. And then I started seeing, you know, you keep doing the same things over and you're not taking care of yourself. Maybe there's a little problem in there. But what I have found that this program has given me was restoration. That second step is about restoration. Whatever I had given up to this disease, and it's there, it's present, it's in our lives, and it's there. And if I don't take care of that disease spiritually, every day it will be back, whether it's him or whether it's me. And I know today that I can go to the point that I can hurt somebody physically. And I need to be very aware of that. And so we started doing these steps. The third step, I didn't get it. I did not get it. And it was time to write. And my sponsor knew it was time to write. And I'd hear in the meetings, if you don't have the third step before you start the fourth step, go back to the first step, you know, all of that stuff. But I needed to write. I needed to get that stuff out. So we did the writing. We did the writing. And by the time I shared my fifth step with her, I knew that there was a God out there that loved me. That God kept me alive long enough to get into the doors of Al-Anon, where I could then begin to hear a different message, a different message. And so I started working those amends steps, and I really liked the amends step where I was told to stay out of their life the rest of their life. That was good. That was Bob's ex-wife. Stay out of it. I started that process, and then I started looking at how can I separate myself. You know, detachment is a big thing within Al-Anon. How do I do that? How do I detach and not amputate? Because it was real easy. I'd stop talking in this thing. And I knew that my silence got him more than my words would ever affect him. And so I used that. And so what I got to do is I got to learn how to, in the moment, right here, right now, speak up and say, no, we're not going to do this again. And it took a long time to do that. And so the no's have been very, very important for me. I have a little horn that I was going to bring today, but I was told not to. And it's this little horn, and it goes, no, 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 no. And my little goddaughter loves it. She just absolutely loves it. So working those steps, going through the 12th step, understanding that I can absolutely get somebody to a meeting where the message is. I may not be able to help you, especially early on, but I could tell you where the help was. And if you get into the meetings and you stay long enough, you're going to hear something. I was told early on to start looking for the miracle. And so I get up every day and we do the gratitude list. And I say, okay, I have gas today. I have food on the table today. You know, and I just have that attitude that we have. And then I started looking for the miracle and I started seeing the miracle. And then I started claiming the miracle and I began to live it. And I began to live it. And today I am a miracle and I get to live it. And it's a get to for me. It's not a have to. Once I came into this program, everything was a get to. Because I could have very well, if I had killed myself that night, I would not have had these past 34 years of relationships and recovery and awarenesses and the beauty of what this program has brought to us. Al-Anon does not promise me that there's not going to be life happening. It's going to be life happening. When I found that higher power, that God of my understanding, what that brought to me was that God was not going to remove everything, because I remember the prayers early on. Well, God, if you help us not have to have a big income tax bill that we can't pay, then I promise you I will. Those were my prayers. Those were my prayers. And what my prayers are today is when I have to walk through something hard, I say, okay, you lead and I'll follow. You go before me, and I'm looking for the strength to do the things that I don't have the strength to do. And I get through it. And unless I do something to harm myself or someone around me, I will get to see the result eventually. I'll get to see it tomorrow. So it just became a way of life. It is a foundation. It is a foundation for me. And I built that foundation. I'm very grateful we had it. And then we started healing as a couple. It was very important in the beginning that he had his program, I had my program, and I didn't know if I wanted to stay. And for 2 years, I'd go to work and I'd say, yes, I'm coming home tonight. You talk about someone feeling insecure. Because I didn't know if I was going to come back. Because I wanted to leave, because that was my answer. And so finally, after I did my writing and started working these steps, I said, you don't have to ask me that question anymore. And so we started with the traditions. My sponsor and her husband took us through those traditions of Al-Anon and the AA traditions and learning how to apply it to our lives, learning how to apply it to the family. And my very favorite one, and there's two favorites. One of them was, there's only one God, Bob, and it's not you. And I would say that, and I'd say it with that attitude, and then it was finally, okay, who's the ultimate authority here? You know, who is in charge here? And so we can do that now. But the other thing that has helped me, not only with my husband, but later on with my daughter, with my family members, with my work, is what is my primary purpose? You know, my sister had this disease, and she was very, very, you know, it affected her, and she turned mean when she had the personality change. She would be mean, not physically, but verbally. And so I stopped talking to her, and I began to rebuild that relationship. And so when I go visit her, I thought, oh, God, I have to hear it all. And it's like, what's your primary purpose? Why are you going to see her? Because I'm trying to rebuild this relationship. Can I do it on what I can do? In the beginning, it was a card a month. It was a phone call a week. It was maybe one visit a year. And then I learned how to limit the visits. And then I learned not to visit on holidays. You know, just little things we hear in the meetings that were very powerful. But what was my primary purpose for being there? It was to rebuild that relationship and to get to love her the way she was. And in our Al-Anon literature, it also talks about in this love, looking for that part of every human being that is untouched by disease. And so my primary purpose on those visits was to see that part of her that was untouched by disease. And see, she lived in this thing too. And she suffered from this thing as well. And I couldn't see that early on because I was so defensive. And so as I started working these steps and living this program, I was able to love her for where she was at. And I had the great honor of, you know, the last 2 weeks that she was living, to go down there and be with her and to just be us. And when I could feel myself being that overprotective, controlling, I say, I'm really being a pain in do-you-know-what right now, aren't I? And she says, you are. And so I could just love her for where she was at. And as a result of that, we were able to complete some amends. And I was able to complete some amends to my mother through her. Because there are people in this program, at least before I got here, that had died, and I didn't know how to make those amends. And so I learned how to make it with some of the women in my meetings. And I learned how to make it in direct amends with my sister and with my brother. And just saying every time that I did a different action, knowing that it was in honor of this person. And that's what this is all about for me, is the different actions, the different actions. So we went to that European, it was a wonderful part of our life. It was a wonderful part. We met a lot of great people. We're still friends with a lot of them. But I got to see Al-Anon and AA in a different light. So my sponsor was that one that was angry with, we didn't do it that way here. And so she had a local lady sponsor her that would always tell her, be sweet. Be sweet, Barbara. Be sweet. And it's this little southern lady, and she just say, be sweet, Barbara. And so Barbara, my sponsor and I, too, we like to move a lot. So she was in Tennessee when I was getting ready to go overseas. And so this lady told me, she says, now, I want you to go to those meetings and remember that you need them more than they need you. Get that arrogance out of the way. 4 years recovery, we're the old timers over there, so that's a very scary thing. But I remember that, and I remember that every meeting I go to, that I want to sit and I want to hear God's message. It may be different from what I had when I came in, but there's a message in there. And there's a meeting going on somewhere every day throughout this whole, you know, everywhere. And there's a conference every weekend like this, I'm pretty sure, everywhere in the United States. In Europe, they had the conferences. I think they did them just a couple times a year when I was there. And everybody, you know, their assembly was not like we have here. People would all come to this type of a group and have it as a separate meeting because it was so hard to get to. We'd have our Al-Anon days, and this is something that I wanted to share, that being so limited, that contempt prior to investigation, not understanding the world, not understanding things. I knew Al-Anon this way. So we're over there. We're going to an Al-Anon day. The English-speaking meetings are on an army base. So we drive up to the check-in gate, and so it's a car full of women and kids, and they want to know why we're there. And so I've got 4 years of Al-Anon, and I'm telling them, you don't need to tell them. This is an anonymous program. And they go, be quiet, Catherine. But you don't need to tell them. We don't have to tell them that. It's anonymous. Catherine, be quiet. You know, because they were going around the car, checking it for bombs and all of this stuff. And I just had no clue. So it's different. This one lady that I go to meetings with, that has been in South Africa. Oh, my God. You know, they bulldoze the houses down. in order to take the land, and that the women would still come and they'd still meet. And they had one piece of literature that they shared between all of them because they wanted this thing so desperately. I have no clue about that. I have to deal with Atlanta traffic. I don't really have a bulldozer coming to pull down, you know, to take down my house. But it's not any less urgent for us to be in this recovery here in the States as it was over there. But oh my God, it's an amazing what can happen with one person sharing with another person. It started in that kitchen with one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. And then as it grew, the wives were in the kitchen. The wives were in the kitchen talking, waiting for the meetings to get over with. And then the wives were out by the cars talking. And then all of a sudden it was like, well, you know, we have some of these same isms. Maybe we need to do something about this. And so one person talked to another, and it began to grow. So, everybody, there's something in our literature that talks about nobody is immune from this disease. Nobody is immune. Our daughter, when Bob and I first got married, we had all that chaos going on. She, you know, one of the things that when I did that fourth step and that fifth step, there's that part that we went back and we spent an hour and came back and said, what is that one thing you don't want to tell me? What is that one thing? Because there's always one thing, and that one thing is going to keep me sick. That one thing is going to keep me in bondage. And so I did that, and I came back, and that one thing was my daughter had been kidnapped from me by her father. And all that's true. And all those years I blamed him. I blamed him for taking her, and it was 7 years before I saw her again. And then she was well into her disease. But that one thing was when she was kidnapped, that choice I was talking about, I made that choice. I'm not going to go get her because it's better for her to be in that than what we're living in. And that shame and guilt kept me in bondage. And so as I've worked on this program, it's very important to me to be present. She's back in my life today, and she's struggling. She's struggling with her own disease, and she's doing it different. She's doing it different than what AA did for my husband. And I was having that arrogance and doing that thing that we do. Don't you know? If you do, let me get you help. And I learned to love her where she was at. I learned to let her go, and I became the consistent loving force in her life. And we had some hard choices we had to make with her. She was a teenager. She'd run away, get in trouble, come back. She'd go to Oregon, get in trouble, and come back. She'd go to Washington, get in trouble, and come back. And we played that game for about 3 years after she came back to live with us. And I told her, Al-Anon told me, mean what you say and say what you mean. Don't say it mean, but mean what you say and say what you mean. And I told her, I said, if you run away again, you can't come back. And when she came back, I said, you can't come in. But I'm a fixer. I had to make it softer for her. So I had somebody on standby that she could go be at their house. And then she did what she does. She ran. And it has taken me many years in this program to understand when I didn't hear from her. Because it could be 6 months before I'd hear from her. And she'd call, and I'd start that stuff of, let me get you help, don't you see? And then someone in Al-Anon said, why not just tell her, thank you for letting me know you're alive. And so I started doing that, and she started calling sooner. But what I learned after years in this program of getting the focus off of her and seeing the disease in her was that she was protecting me as best she could from her disease. So when she'd disappear and I wouldn't hear from her, is when she was well into her disease. She didn't want to call me. She wanted to respect me enough not to bring that to me. And today we can talk about this, and we can talk about what she's going through, and I don't have to fix her, and I don't have to tell her you have to go to AA. She's doing her very best to build a family right now. I love her. I love her husband. She knows we love her unconditionally, but she also knows what to expect. Because what I did in the disease is I tell you one thing and I do another. And if I said no, then I would do yes. And so I started becoming consistent, and she knows today what to expect out of us. And today she can tell me. She says, "Mom, I know you love me without a doubt." And she still emotionally disappears, even though not physically, because she's doing what it is she does. And she's a runner just like I was a runner. And she's an isolator just like I was. But today, I don't have to get my feelings hurt because she won't call me back. My job is not to call every day, but to call or text once a week and just let her know I love her. And when she's ready, she'll pick up the phone. And so I had a lovely conversation with her yesterday. And years ago, I said, "Honey, I'm starting to feel awkward about sharing about you when I speak." She says, "Mom, we're a miracle." She says, "You and I are a miracle. You share it." And so I always call her, and we were able to talk yesterday, and I texted her this morning, and she texted me back and said, just go share the love. And so that's what this program has been able to bring to me. Is it easy? It's not easy. It's not easy, but it's simple. If I do what the steps have shown me how to do, if I wash up and show up even when I don't want to be there, I hear a message. I always hear a message. And I go, and I have a lovely group. My home group is Saturday morning in Roswell. I do this every time. The Way of Hope. I do this every time. But it's the Way of Hope, and it's still on a Saturday. It's like a 45-minute to an hour drive for me, but I want to be with my sponsor, and I love that meeting because it's a book study, and we study how Al-Anon works. And that is absolutely the effects of alcoholism and how I can change my behavior within that, how I can love within that. And so I would cop an attitude because I'm still working and I'm on 400 every day. And, it takes me a while to get to work from coming even just to Alpharetta now. And so I drive and I think, I start that stuff. And so what I stopped doing is I stopped going on the freeway on the weekend and I drive through the countryside and I see the horses. And I get to see the horses grazing, and I get to see all of the animals out running. And people don't know about that route yet, so it's just me and my music, and nobody. And then if they're on the road, I have an attitude. If there's anybody there, it's like, get off of my road. And so by the time I get to my meeting, I'm filled. And then I sit in that room, and I hear the solution, and I get to see the people that I love. And then we go have lunch after. So I get to have a recovery day where I still get into that place of I don't want to do this. And my sponsor for years has said, "I don't care if you want to do it anyway. I don't care." And I did. I'm one of those people that I will do what she tells me to do. And there's a lot of us coming into this room of, "You're not going to tell me what to do. You're just not going to do it." I grew up in that. I am not going to have you tell me what to do. I'm cheating myself. If I do that, I'm cheating myself. So, the amends that I've made to my husband, and I didn't think I owed him amends. I thought it was all him. And so what I learned in here, in our reading, I can't remember if it's the beginning or the end, but it talks about let there be no gossip or criticism of one another. Let the love, understanding, peace of the program grow in you one day at a time. So I stopped. With the help of a sponsor, I would go and I'd tell everybody at the table what he was doing or not doing. And he needs to go get a job, and he needs to. And this is in recovery, people. this is going to a meeting, and then after the meeting, I'm doing this. And I start that. And so we started looking at let there be no gossip or criticism. And I take that home and I say, if I'm gossiping about my husband and then I go to bed with my husband, what does that say about me? So I stop gossiping about him. But if there's an issue that I have, I go to my sponsor. What is gossip? Some people think if it's the truth, it's not gossip. I don't agree with that. Gossip for me is if I go to my sponsor, and then I go to you, 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 I'm into gossip. If I go to get good orderly direction, because I can't stuff that stuff anymore, I have to share it. But if I go get good orderly direction and take positive action about it, then I am in the solution. So I learned that thing that with him, and I've learned how to do it in the business world, because it's real hard when people are there wanting to talk about what's going on in the office and to not engage in that. And it's amazing how free I feel when I don't have to carry all that garbage with me. So I think we're getting close to being done. I actually have a watch this time. What I normally do is I have the opening, I give it to God, and then I know when I'm done. And I usually just cut you off and I say, okay, I'm done now. I think I'm going to read to you this time. And it is from this book. If you haven't studied this book, How Al-Anon Works, it's wonderful. I just love it. I just love it. But there's a part in here that talks about how big we are and that we are not alone. I went into those meetings at NAVA, and for 1 hour, I think I felt safe. For 1 hour, I knew that you knew. I knew that you knew what I was going through. I knew that you knew how I felt. I knew the anger. I knew the fear. I knew the frustration. I knew the obsession. And I knew that I could share the secrets. A lot of the secrets were shared in the fifth step. They weren't shared in the meeting. But then as I grew, I can share in a general way. I don't have to go into detail. But in here, I just want to read this part, and then I am going to be done, and you can go have a nice day. So it's what kind of people will I find in Al-Anon? And it says, We come to Al-Anon from all walks of life. We live in small towns and big cities, from Bangladesh to Paris to Dubuque. We are barely educated. We have postgraduate degrees. We are deeply religious, and we subscribe to no religion at all. We represent all races, political affiliations, sexual orientations, professions, economic and social realms. We are young and not so young, wealthy and impoverished men and women. We are as different as night and day. On the surface, it may seem that we have nothing in common, but if you look deeper, it's easy to see that each of us has been affected by the ravages of another's alcoholism. Whether we are parents, lovers, adult children, spouses, siblings, co-workers, or friends of alcoholics, or an alcoholic, whether the alcoholics in our lives are living or dead, actively drinking or sober for years, when we join together to share our experience, strength, and hope, we find that we have a great deal to offer one another, and we find hope. And if you don't walk away with anything else today, just know that there is hope in this program, and many, many, many times, and every time I go to hear an AA speaker, I see from the depths of where they came, and I see the people today that they are, and it's that psychic change, and it's that changed behavior, and that happens for me too. So I want to thank you for showing up and being here, and I hope you have a great, great, great day. I love you all. Thank you.